AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Invention. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today we're bringing you a classic episode of Invention. This one originally published on January 7th, 2019, and it's about sunglasses.
That's right. Yeah, this is a pretty fun one because sunglasses are one of those inventions that it's easy to take for granted, and it's easy to assume that it's tied pretty much to the modern age. But as we get into here, that's not quite the case. Hey, welcome to Invention. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. Robert, what kind of sunglasses do you wear?
Well, currently, my son is 6 years old, so I've been going through a spell here where I can really only wear whatever kind of semi-garbage swag sunglasses come my way, you know, with various brand names plastered to the side of them, because inevitably, especially when he was younger, my son would have to get his hands on whatever kind of sunglasses I had in the car. So the sunglasses get smudged, sunglasses get scratched up, sunglasses get broken or just lost. And I was pretty good at losing sunglasses even before he came into my life. So I'm hoping that I'm working up to very soon reaching that point where I can actually buy a decent pair of sunglasses that will protect my eyes.
Did you ever actually wear those company sunglasses we got? Did you try those things
time.
On?
I have like six pairs of them.
They like fold in half at the nose.
Yeah, I got those immediately. But mainly, I thought to myself, this is a great decoy brand because my son is going to love like the Transformer-esque qualities of these sunglasses.
Like, here, break that one.
Yeah, but I've ended up wearing them around anyway. So yeah, that's my story. Hopefully, by the time I'm ready to actually get some decent sunglasses, we'll have some like Back to the Future 2 sunglasses, you know, like the ones that you got as a prize at Pizza Hut back in the day when that film first came out, except now these will be legit future sunglasses.
You know, I was trying to think before we decided to do this episode, are sunglasses an invention or not? Do they count?
Yeah, they count.
I guess everything's an invention.
Were we born with sunglasses? Well, we'll get into that. But yeah, it is difficult for us to imagine a time before sunglasses. How did Corey Hart keep track of the visions in his eyes?
I don't know.
How did Rowdy Roddy Piper see through the alien conspiracy?
I guess I don't know. He didn't.
How did Terminator cover up his eye damage?
That's a good point.
Well, really, how did anyone ever in the history of Earth manage to look cool at any given moment, much less shade their eyes from the vicious light of day?
it's already telling that all the examples you point to are cultural ones. You're pointing to movies and stuff rather than talking about how would I get through my life without sunglasses.
Well, this is going to be an important part, though, just the iconography of the sunglasses. Mm-hmm. And that'll be more important later on in our discussion. But
and their psychological effects
exactly.
feed into that.
But initially here, you know, we're complicating the purpose of the sunglasses. Basically, the whole deal is the sun is bright.
I disagree.
And while our eyelids do give us the ability to manipulate the amount of sunlight hitting our eyeballs, it also pays to have other options. And certainly, we have the ability to look away from the sun, to hide from the sun, or to raise a hand or a forearm to block it.
But that's dependent largely on, say, your environment. Mm-hmm. Like, some environments are much brighter than others. What if you live in a place where, say, it's springtime and you're in a place with snow cover?
The
sun can be so bright in those cases because it's not only coming from above but reflecting off of the snow that you essentially cannot use your eyes in the environment.
Right, because otherwise you can't just shade wear a hat. You need to wear like a hat with two bills, right? One on top, one on the bottom. It's coming from all directions. And you need to use your hands for other things. So an individual will need to hunt or fish or craft, etc. You can't just go around with your hands up all the time. When I think about the challenges of dealing with sunlight, I'm always forced to just think about how amazing our eyelids are, though, for manipulating light.
Well, and our irises, of course.
Yes.
I mean, our pupils contract when there's too much light, but there's a point at which they can't contract anymore and
right. Still
see.
And you have to depend on the eyelids. One example I always go to is there's a character in Larry McMurtry's novel Comanche Moon, and he winds up tortured by bandit flares, and they slice his eyelids off.
Oh no!
And they leave him for dead in the sun, and he's half driven mad by the whole ordeal.
That's sick. Eyelids.
Oh yeah, it is a sick weird book. I love it. It's my favorite Larry McMurtry book. But afterwards, this character ends up constructing a pair of special sunglasses for himself with these varying levels of darkness so that he can just click through them as he needs them, depending on where he is, if he's, indoors, outdoors, bright day, cloudy day, etc. Mm-hmm. But I always come back to that because it's like, yeah, if you had to recreate the functionality of your eyelids, what kind of invention would you have to build?
You got so many parts of your body that you really don't appreciate but would if they were gone.
Right. But enough about Larry McMurtry's cyborg westerns. Let's just get down to sunglasses. What is essential to a modern pair of sunglasses? What do you need as we're sort of deconstructing the invention?
Well, you need a frame to hold them over the eyes, and you need lenses that will, in one way or another, filter the incoming light. They obviously can't be completely opaque. You need to be able to see through them, but they also need to stop some amount of bad stuff from getting in.
Right. So, like, on a material level, it seems pretty straightforward. Glass itself is a rather old invention. We can revisit glass at some point in a future episode, but you find examples of this in ancient Mesopotamia. Certainly, crystals and other substances were known to ancient people. So just the materials of, say, building something out of sticks, we can all imagine the sort of Flintstones-style spectacles or sunglasses that one could conceivably have. But invention is always about that moment where someone actually puts materials together and creates something that has not existed before. So we're forced to ask that question, well, where do we really see the earliest indications of to a certain extent, spectacles? We can't talk about sunglasses without talking about spectacles a little bit, but we're mostly concerned with sunglasses in this episode because they look cooler.
Right. Focusing lenses, that's a story for another time.
Yes.
I think we're dealing with a somewhat simpler story right now.
Yes.
Even though sunglasses might not have become extremely popular around the world until after spectacles were widely used.
But it's really too bad because the sunglasses, especially our modern usage of them, they're really important. They really protect us.
Well, think about the sunglasses you wear as a kind of radiation suit for your eyes. Think on that one for a second. Try to actually cognize the fact that good old-fashioned sunlight is literally radiation from a star. That's a phrase that always echoes in my mind when it's really beaten down on my head. And a good pair of sunglasses should do multiple things, right? They should decrease the intensity of the light reaching your eyes. So if it's a bright, shining day or there's glare off of water or off of a reflective surface or something, you need light to reach your eyes in order to see, but you don't need so much of it. And when the number of lumens in your surroundings exceed what your eyes need in order to see, your iris muscles contract, they shrink your pupil, the shutter of your eye, and that admits less in, but eventually your pupils can't contract anymore. And then you have to try to limit more light by squinting your eyelids, but eventually you run into problems there, right? Sometimes it's so bright that squinting becomes difficult, or you're squinting so much you want to completely close your eyes. Now, the other thing that's important for sunglasses to do is decrease or eliminate ultraviolet radiation when that's coming at your eyes. Now, there's really no benefit to getting ultraviolet radiation in your eyes, whereas you need the visible light that comes in from the sun in order to see your surroundings, you don't really need UV light at all. And so if sunglasses can reduce or even completely eliminate UV exposure to your eyes, that's a good thing because your eyes can be injured by UV exposure. But as we were saying earlier, also, let's not ignore the fact that sunglasses are a very profound style choice and play a psychological and cultural role as well. I think people often wear sunglasses as much for style and psychological reasons as they do for reducing glare and reducing UV exposure.
In any event, you're going to want a good pair of sunglasses before you go out to, say, a sporting event, right? For a number of reasons, because you're outdoors, it may be very bright, and then it's also a social engagement. You know, you want to look cool to the other fans or their friends and family that have traveled there with you.
In the case of the dude, you can't go bowling without sunglasses.
Exactly. So for our first historical journey in our attempt to understand sunglasses of old, let's go back to the ancient Romans. Let's go to the Colosseum.
Now, this, I think, is actually going to be a false example, but it's something that's interesting that sometimes gets cited in this context.
Yes.
So we're going to go to our old friend Pliny the Elder, first century CE Roman writer in his Natural History, translated by John Bostock. Pliny is discussing in Book 37 of his Natural History, quote, the natural history of precious stones, and he comes to a section on what he calls Smaragdus.
Mm.
I could have sworn that was one of the Wraith Kings in the Lord of the Rings saga, but I don't think so.
Which anniversary gift is Smaragdus? I can never remember. It's like wood, ivory, Smaragdus.
Right. So Smaragdus appears to be a term used for green precious stones, for beryl stones like emerald or for jasper stones. And he seems to be talking about emeralds. I think that's the way it's most often translated. And Pliny dwells for a while on how beautiful the emerald is and how restful to the eye, how soothing to look upon. Quote, even when the vision has been fatigued with intently viewing other objects, it is refreshed by being turned upon this stone. And lapidaries know of nothing that is more gratefully soothing to the eyes, its soft green tints being wonderfully adapted for assuaging lassitude when felt in those organs. By those organs, I think he means eyes.
Yes.
But anyway, getting to the part that's often cited as emerald sunglasses, but actually appears to not be. He writes, quote, when the surface of the smaragdus is flat, it reflects the image of objects in the same manner as a mirror. The Emperor Nero used to view the combats of the gladiators upon a smaragdus.
Upon a smaragdus being key here, perhaps.
Right. So this would have been the first century CE, and it's been cited as an early use of tinted transparencies in the sun, the idea that Nero was maybe watching the net fighters and the pursuers, the secutors, through gems like lenses. So just, I guess, try to imagine he's holding emeralds over his eyes and looking through them like lenses to filter out some of the glare.
I think I also saw an artistic interpretation of this where you see the portly emperor there all in his finery, and he's holding up something that looks like – it's almost like opera binoculars, you know, except it's just one emerald that he's holding up to his eye.
I'm thinking with the green and that image you're describing, this has got to be the inspiration for David Lynch's depiction of Baron Harkonnen in his adaptation of Dune.
Oh, does he have an emerald?
Everything's green around him.
Oh, okay.
It's like his rooms are green. He's got this green environment. He's kind of a Nero-like figure. But anyway, the reason I said this was a false choice is because it sounds to me like in the context, Pliny meant that Nero, if this story is even true, watched the fights as reflected in the surface of the Smaragdus like a mirror, because he was just talking about how it reflects like a mirror. And this would still have probably some like sun dampening effect, right? Just try to imagine something reflected in an emerald. It's not going to be reflected in a blinding way. But so he's looking at that since the emerald reflects less light than the source provides.
I was looking at a text titled The Origin and Development of Spectacles by C.J.S. Thompson, and this is an older text. This is from 1937, but he also mentions the Nero story, and he definitely argued, too, that it was probably a case where Nero just liked to watch the festivities colored green, via the emerald, and that he gained no sunshading from it. And, yeah, I think my suspicion here is that based on some recent research we did for Stuff to Blow Your Mind about gladiatorial combat, it was for our episode on the Trident, there was – if you're a fan of both the sort of the sporting combat of the gladiatorial spectacle as well as like the drama and all these other ridiculous aspects of it, you're going to be you might gain something from looking out at this combat between men dressed as fish, men using nautical weapons, and then adding a green overlay on that. I could see where the green tint could perhaps be helpful in that particular mode of entertainment.
What you're saying is taking on a decidedly Lynchian vibe. I think the connection is there.
Now, Thompson also points out that while the Romans certainly suffered from eye problems and had their own treatments for those ailments, there's no mention in the work of, say, Celsus of artificial sight aids. He mentions that in writings prior to the 13th century, one finds only occasional mentions of magnifying glasses, so the use of some sort of a lens to look at finer details or perhaps, you know, holding it up to a text, but you don't see mention of spectacles. By the way, he also wrote that there was no evidence that lenses were known to the ancient Egyptians or the Hebrews. However, we do have a very early magnifying glass or, depending on who you ask, perhaps a fire-starting glass, something that you use to refract the rays of the sun, you know, to start a small fire,
mm-hmm.
The kind of thing that children may sometimes do when trying to burn ants.
Hopefully not to ants.
Hopefully not. I mean, and, you know, one has to be careful. But at any rate, this particular lens, the Nimrod lens, is a 3,000-year-old crystal unearthed in 1850 by Austin Henry Layard in the Syrian palace of Nimrod. However, we're also not sure. It might have simply been a decorative element. It might not have been used. And at any rate, it's not tinted.
Okay, so we're not talking about sunglasses.
Right, here. But we are talking about like a crystal that may have been – that people may have looked through. Now, you have to ask the question, like, to what extent did they just look through it because it was cool? Like, what's more mystical than holding up some sort of a gleaming crystal, even if it's clear, and watching how the world is distorted ever so slightly?
Now, another thing that's worth noting is that we've been talking about lenses and tinted lenses, but obviously people came up with ways of protecting their eyes from the sun, having accessories beyond just their hands and their eyelids and stuff to protect their eyes from the sun long before there were tinted glass or plastic lenses or anything. For example, hats and umbrellas. That's
course,
obvious, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But a much more ingenious and much more interesting one is what I want to mention. The Inuit and Yupik peoples of the northern circumpolar regions, today Canada, Alaska, Greenland, and Russia, have for centuries made these ingenious devices known as snow goggles.
Yes, and I want to come back to what we said earlier about lumens before we get into this, because I think this really drives home the necessity that led to the invention. So in an indoor environment, a human is typically going to encounter 400 to 600 lumens. That's the intensity of the light. And our comfortable level for lumens, it's going to go up to around 3,500. If you're in the shade on a sunny day, you're probably encountering around 1,000 lumens. Sunny day out on, say, a highway or other reflective surface, you know, we all know what it's like to drive on like a really sunny day. You almost have to have shades.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to deal with something like 6,000 or more lumens. 10,000 lumens is the danger zone where you really have to start worrying about the health of your eyes. But a snowfield on a sunny day, you're talking 12,000 plus lumens. And this is where you enter the domain of potential snow blindness.
Right. And this is, of course, because of the reflective power of white snow, mm-hmm. right? It can create almost a kind of double sun effect, sun above and sun below being reflected back up. Whereas, you know, a normal patch of ground that's got, say, grass or just open soil might reflect about 10% of the UV rays coming from the sun. Snow can reflect not quite 100%, but something like close to 100% of it, nearly doubling your UV exposure. And so if you are, say, living in northern regions where there's a lot of snow cover, one thing that works in your favor is that for much of the year, the sun doesn't get super bright, right? It doesn't get super high in the sky, doesn't get super direct, but it will in certain parts of the year where there is still a lot of snow cover on the ground. So when you've got those things working together, say, bright sun, heavy snow cover, maybe in the springtime when the sun is out high in the sky, proper eye protection is incredibly important. And not just because it's difficult to hunt or see where you're going when the sun's reflecting off the white snow and there's blinding glare and everything, but it's what you mentioned. There's this risk of snow blindness, which is also known as photokeratitis. So as we mentioned earlier, part of natural sunlight is ultraviolet radiation. And ultraviolet radiation can damage the cornea. It can damage the conjunctiva, the outer surfaces of the eye, just like it can damage the skin. And this is why photokeratitis is often described as something like, quote, sunburn of the eye. Symptoms include pain, a feeling of having like irritants or foreign bodies lodged in the eye, tearing up, swelling and redness, light sensitivity, and sometimes even truly temporary loss of vision. That's where the blindness comes from. And so if you need to be doing stuff out in the snow where the sun is bright, this is going to be a problem. And snow goggles fight this problem with a very smart design. They're typically a carved frame, usually made from animal bone or walrus tusk, sometimes from driftwood, or sometimes even from like strange materials. Like I saw one that I think was from baleen from a whale. And this frame fits tight over the eyes so that light doesn't get in on the sides or the top. And then light is allowed to enter through two very wide, very narrow slots carved in the middle of the goggles, which are sometimes darkened on the inside with a material like soot. And these narrow slits allow the person wearing them to see without exposing their eyes to too much glare or UV radiation. And some alternate versions also have multiple slits, more like shutter shades or Venetian blinds or something.
They're not unlike the sort of novelty plastic 1980s sunglasses, you know, where they yeah. where you just had, you had no glass, no lens,
shutter
just
shades.
These slits. Yeah, so shutter shades, which, yeah, you look at the, especially the 1980s versions of these, and it's easy to just think this is ridiculous. This is the sunglasses. This is eyewear as a purely decorative element, and to a certain extent it's true, but they do have a certain functionality as well.
Yeah, and in many ways a highly effective functionality. I mean, this, if you don't have tinted glass to work with, this is a genius design.
Yeah, and the necessity that led to it, like this would be the kind of environment that would necessitate sunglasses in a way that other parts of the world did not.
Right.
All right. Well, on that note, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll discuss some more curios from the history of invention in regards to the sunglasses.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should
start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
All right, we're back. Now, another frequently cited example of sunglasses, early sunglasses use, involved them not being used to protect against the sun or perhaps in any way affect vision, but that they were allegedly used just to hide your eyes from others.
This is a crucially important part of sunglasses.
Oh,
we could not ignore it.
I mean, think of all the times you've worn sunglasses, and there are times where, yeah, you wear them to protect your eyes. There are times when you wear them to see better in a high light intensive environment. There are times when you do it to look cool, mm-hmm. but there are times when, say, I've worn them, for instance, on the train before, when the train is underground, because it kind of makes me a little invisible. Yeah. If I have my sunglasses on, my earbuds in, then I am like less visibly present.
Well, it means you can look around the world around mm-hmm. you without ever unequivocally being caught looking at someone or something.
Yeah.
It's a natural human tendency to want to look around and see who's around you.
Yeah.
But like if you get caught looking at somebody, that's always awkward, especially if you've got some kind of social anxiety. You don't want to like make that eye contact and be like, oh, we just both looked at each other at the same time.
Right. And if you're on the train, sometimes you need to look at the weird person on the train. And if you're not wearing sunglasses and you're doing this, that weird person might be you.
Right.
So it's just a great solution for everybody involved. So multiple sources report that Chinese judges wore smoky quartz glasses to hide their eye expressions from the court during the 13th century.
Hmm.
So this would have been during the Song Dynasty, 960 through 1279 CE. So I was looking around a little bit about this, and Harvard's Kaiming Chu wrote the following in 1936 in The Introduction of Spectacles into China, which deals in large part with just spectacles in mm-hmm. general. And if we come back and discuss spectacles on the show specifically, we'll probably return to this and other sources. But he cites Chinese writings that indicated that, quote, under the Song Dynasty, judges in deciding cases in the court used rock, crystal, or quartz to read illegible legal documents in the sun. So mm-hmm. here, the idea seems to be that they were using them for magnification instead, or perhaps in addition to shielding their eyes from other people at the court.
Well, it specifies in the sun,
yeah.
So that would seem to make it sound like they were trying to shield their eyes from glare.
Perhaps. So, this leaves me confused, though, as to like what was actually going on. Or was it a case where, for instance, these spectacles were arranged for reading in the sun or for some sort of magnification purpose, but then they realized, oh, wait, these also shield our eyes, and it makes judging a little easier.
Right. Well, you can absolutely see how sunglasses would – and we'll get more into the psychological effects later on. But you can see how sunglasses would be helpful if you were trying to give the appearance of impartiality. You know,
right.
If you're a judge, you want to hide any sign of your face showing emotion in reaction to arguments or something like that. I'm not sure that's the reasoning here, but you can see how it could be.
Right. And you still retain a portion of your humanity in a way that you wouldn't if you were wearing, say, a hood or an iron mask or some other covering for your face. Now, I looked at another text, Old Chinese Spectacles by Otto Durham Rasmussen, and there's a discussion of methods used to grind, quote, crystal, smoky quartz, and a variety of rose quartz into lenses. And apparently Marco Polo reported Chinese lenses in 1270, stating that people used lenses of quartz or semi-precious stones to aid their sight.
Okay, but here we're still talking about not just like casual usage among the people, not fashion usage, mm-hmm. but like specialized cases, and in some cases seeming to be some kind of magnifier or sight aid.
Right. Yeah. And definitely a premium item that would be used by a specialist.
And in fact, it does seem that also in like Europe and the United States, tinted glasses did exist some in the past few centuries, but they were not widely used and certainly not outside some kind of corrective or medical context or specialized research context until the 20th century, right?
Yeah. I mean, sunglasses have become such a fashion symbol, it is easy to forget the necessity of them, even if we're not dealing with just the basic ideas of, oh, it's like a super bright day or you're in the middle of a snowfield. Because tinted lenses can assist people with low vision, and they're often prescribed to people with ocular diseases such as age-related macular degeneration, retinitis pigmentosa, cataract, retinopathy, cone dystrophy, and oculocutaneous albinism.
Yeah, I've also seen references to tinted lenses being recommended for, say, people who were undergoing some of the symptoms of syphilis or
yes.
something
mm-hmm.
like that, which makes me wonder if there's a connection with I have to go to a movie in Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, where Gary Oldman as Dracula wears those tinted lenses in the – I guess that's supposed to be the 19th century in England.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I've read before that there are theories, and this is again just a theory that Bram Stoker could have had syphilis, and that might have on some level informed his writing of Dracula.
I don't remember him mentioning tinted spectacles in the book. Did he?
I do not recall that being a detail of the book per se.
It's definitely there in that movie. Anyway, mm-hmm. it's interesting. It's an interesting choice. Why ever Coppola did it. But for modern sunglasses, it's hard to say that they were actually exactly invented at any particular time because, as we mentioned, various kinds of shaded or tinted lenses had existed for a while for various specialized uses. It wasn't until the 1920s, I think, really, when commercial sunglasses and tinted goggles for driving often really became popular. And then especially, it seems, in the 1930s, when commercially produced sunglasses became popular in the United States due to there being a fashion item worn by the rich and the glamorous. Now, if we want to focus briefly on the idea of how sunglasses actually work, I feel like you can take a couple of approaches here. You can go the very simple route, or you can go the incredibly tedious route.
Right.
And how do we avoid those two?
I think what we'll do is we'll try and hit the high notes here.
Okay.
And just remind everybody, if you want a more in-depth discussion of how sunglasses work, there's actually a How Stuff Works article, How Sunglasses Work. Oddly enough, that's the title of the article.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and it is a pretty good one. It takes you through a lot of the more optical details. Like essentially, to really understand how sunglasses work, you need a full refresher on how light works. And that's what this article provides, and that's what we do not have time to provide here today. But we talked about lumens already, and we've talked about just basically how sunglasses modify incoming light to your eyes.
Now, there are different ways that different types of sunglasses do that.
Right. Modern sunglasses especially depend on a number of different methods. There's tinting, polarization, photochromic lenses, there's mirroring, scratch-resistant coating, anti-reflective coating, and UV coating. Tinting, though, is largely what we're talking about here, and it's certainly key to the older methods of lens-based shades. Gray tint is generally popular because gray tint reduces the overall amount of brightness with the least amount of color distortion. Because this was actually a really interesting thing to read up on, because when you think about the color of shades, it's mm-hmm. easy to just think that it's just purely You know, a fashion choice. Am I going to have brown? Or am I going to have gray?
Maybe a mood choice. Yeah. Like, are you Nero and you want to see the gladiator fights in green because you like green?
Yeah, or maybe I like rose-tinted glasses. There's actually, now I'm remembering that I have been into various new age stores where they sell glasses that are tinted with, and they come with like documentation to tell you about how this particular tint will affect your mood.
Oh, like in a magic stone power kind of way? Like it has the powers of the supposed powers of these crystals embedded in the glass?
Oh, yes. There's definitely a New Age crystal vibe to it. But also I think maybe there's they were incorporating a little bit of like color theory as well.
How do I get diamond sunglasses? I just want to look through dark diamonds.
I want to say that
the dark crystal
Scrooge
sunglasses.
McDuck had those, didn't
he? Oh, really?
Maybe. But
well, I want to say that there was like a part from the cartoon that showed when it played all the clips at the beginning that he had like diamonds stuck in his eyes.
That's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
But I think, yeah, you wouldn't want diamonds stuck in your eyes. That'd be pointy.
but anyway, the take home here is that different color, different tinted lenses do different things. They interact with light in different ways. So again, gray is not going to really distort color all that much. Meanwhile, yellow or gold tints reduce the amount of blue light while allowing a larger percentage of other frequencies through, but they can also create a kind of glare known as blue haze. The yellow tint virtually eliminates the blue part of the spectrum and has the effect of making everything bright and sharp. Amber and brownish tints reduce glare, and they have molecules that absorb higher frequency colors, such as blue. In addition to UV rays, green tints on lenses filter some blue light and reduce glare, and they offer the highest contrast and greatest visual acuity.
I guess that's a thing we hadn't mentioned much already, is that certain types of light filtering could actually sharpen images and reduce blur.
Such as at the gladiatorial combat. You know? Who knows?
I don't know if that worked.
But, no.
Well, no, that makes me think, you know, there are these stories from the past of people going to the movie theaters with sunglasses on, right? You'd go sit in the movies and watch through sunglasses. I wonder if some people were trying to see a sharper image somehow.
Hmm. Now, the oldest method of tinting depends on constant density.
Now, what does that mean?
So this is a uniform tinting throughout the lens. Nowadays, we'd have to wear those shades over the uncomfortable 3D glasses that we're already wearing, right?
Let's say you're heading up a chain gang that's got Luke in it.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about old Cool Hand Luke and the man with no eyes, that chain gang guard where he's always wearing those perfectly mirrored shades and just seems to have no soul.
Exactly. Or at the other end of the spectrum, let's say you're just trying to look super cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are so many reasons people wear sunglasses that don't have that much to do with blocking out the sunlight. Sunglasses, I think, have a profound psychological and cultural impact, and we should talk about that when we come back.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
They came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
All right, we're back. So we're talking about the legacy of sunglasses. What are they doing psychologically and culturally?
Now, one thing is that human behavior and self-image pretty clearly are influenced by some interplay between our ongoing senses of seeing and being seen, right? Mm-hmm. At any given time, you're potentially seeing something and you're potentially being seen, and how you feel about those things is going to affect your confidence, your relation to other people, maybe your generosity. As just one strange example, just think about all the ways that things feel different if you're viewing them simply through some kind of barrier or screen, like the way that your relationship to the world changes when you're looking at that world through a car windshield. You know what I mean? How being inside a car looking out at the world fundamentally changes how you think about that world, as opposed to being in the exact same place but not looking through the glass of a windshield.
Yeah, like it's an entirely different scenario if you're just, say, at a summer camp, just walking through the woods. But then if you're wearing a hockey mask while doing so, it changes everything.
Well, no, it really does. I mean, and it's not just the act of, say, stalking through the woods or the act of driving. It also seems to be something about that barrier. And likewise, sunglasses can be a kind of shield or barrier or blind that has psychological effects on the person wearing them and the person they interact with. Think again of the Chinese courtroom example. You could see in a maybe well-meaning or benevolent way that a judge hiding their face could be a way to try to show impartiality or neutrality, not show emotional reactions to arguments or statements or evidence. On the other hand, you could say that a judge covering their face could be some kind of power move, right? Mm. You know, the judge says, you will not have access to my humanity. I will look upon you, but you will not look upon me.
And even though they're not technically the judge, we do see this with our law enforcement figures, right? And those chain gang figures like the man with no eyes or clearly the Cool Hand Luke inspired character in the Coen Brothers' Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where you often see like fire reflected in his dark shades, but never his eyes.
Yeah. And there is actually research on the effects of sunglasses on human behavior.
Yeah, I was looking at a 2010 University of Toronto study that found that people wearing sunglasses were less generous. Now, this was via a very small experiment in which participants were given a small amount of money to divvy up between themselves and another individual. And they found that if you were wearing the sunglasses, you were a little stingier with the money. In a way, it's like they could see less of you, and therefore there was less to be lost in dishing out less money.
Well, it's this feeling of being inside and being disconnected, I think, that has something to do with that. I mean, it's the same way that you are maybe not you, but I would suspect you, like most people, are just less generous when thinking about the people around you when you're in a car. You ever notice how, like, If you were walking past somebody on the sidewalk and they got in your way, you wouldn't be like, "What's wrong with you, you idiot?
Oh, yeah.
You know, get out of my way." But people in cars say stuff like that all the time. I think it has something to do with like looking out through that screen on the world. It creates this barrier that undercuts your generosity and connection with other people outside as humans and turns them more into like obstacle stimuli.
Yeah. Now, another thing we should mention is that this study does follow in the tradition of Philip Zimbardo's famous Stanford Prison Experiment, which it's easy to forget because this is like the less – powerful detail of that study. But
I mean, I think I have read that there are a lot of people who look back on that study and think, we shouldn't draw too many conclusions mm-hmm. from it. I think I don't remember exactly what the criticisms are now, but I think it has been critically reappraised.
Right. It is a study that certainly has a long legacy unto itself. A lot of people have revisited it that in cases have had issues with it, but it did entail the use of mirrored sunglasses. Those assigned to play the roles of guards in that experiment were given sticks and sunglasses.
What? And basically the issue is that in that experiment, some people were assigned to play the role of prisoners and some people were assigned to play the role of guards. And they found that even just being given these fake roles, supposedly the people really took on their roles and like the guards became brutal.
Well, no matter what we think about the Stanford Prison Experiment, well, we do have plenty of studies in enclosed cognition and the ways that various cultural uniforms change the way we think about ourselves, our own abilities, our roles. Mm-hmm. And typically those experiments include things like giving somebody a doctor's coat and a clipboard.
Yeah. Increases their sense of authority.
Yeah. But in this bit, you can look back at the Stanford Prison Experiment and say, well, a stick and some sunglasses, this is kind of to a certain extent the uniform of the guard. So how many cases are sunglasses a part of a uniform? Official or unofficial, that have certain attributes that we perhaps take on when we wear them and we're thinking about that particular archetype. For instance, it could be something like just the cool cat who's wearing shades. Maybe we're just thinking about David Caruso putting those deal with it shades on and saying something cool.
Well, that's another good question. Why are sunglasses so generally perceived as cool? I've read about this and, mm-hmm. One of the ideas out there is that sunglasses are perceived as cool because, as we've been talking about, they limit people's access to your emotions and to your reactions, right? They make you appear more static. When other people can't read your expressions, you appear more, impassive, more confident, more cool.
Yeah, more stoic. I mean, the old saying is what the eyes are a mirror into the soul,
Yeah.
Our eyes are an important part of how we communicate with people, and there can be a certain vulnerability. There are various ways that we can just have like dumb staring eyes. And if you're wearing shades, nobody can see that confused look in your eyes.
It's a type of social psychological armor.
Yeah.
In some ways, quite literally, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're a way to hide. I was also looking at a 2013 article published in Psychological Science, a journal of the Association for Psychological Science. And in this, researchers from the Chinese University of Hong Kong found that participants who relived an embarrassing experience tended to prefer large, dark-tinted sunglasses. And they also found that embarrassed participants expressed greater interest in sunglasses as well as restorative face creams.
Hmm.
So again, they're like both exercises in covering your face with something. Now, this study was conducted with only Chinese participants, so the authors pointed out that they're very likely going to be certain cultural elements to these test subjects that wouldn't be present in other test subjects.
Of course, that's always the case. I mean, a lot of studies are just done on American college students.
Yeah,
there might be cultural issues there as well.
Exactly. But I do feel like this in general, I think it matches up with a lot of our experiences. If you're going out in public and you've been crying, wearing sunglasses is the way to go. I mean, mm-hmm. We've all had situations too where you're just feeling a little shy or emotionally vulnerable. Putting on sunglasses, even if your eyes are not puffy from tears, it's a way of like disconnecting and feeling a little safer and being just a little less up in the face of the world.
It's putting the screen up.
Yeah.
Now, I could be wrong about this, but I also feel like that there's perhaps some interesting connection between our preference for sunglasses and the way that we experience so much of our lives through screen devices now.
Mm.
You know, that the sunglasses introduce this idea of looking at the world through a kind of barrier or screen, and we're constantly doing now social interactions on phones, on computers, on devices where we're also interacting with the world through a screen. I don't know if there's anything interesting to tease out there, but it feels right to me.
Huh. I was just thinking of another thing. Have you ever encountered somebody, and generally we're talking about people we don't know that well or even celebrities, but people who you never see without their shades, and then when you finally do, it's a little unnerving because
mm-hmm.
you're like, oh, is that what your eyes look like?
It's like seeing Kiss without their makeup.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes such a part of their identity, But it also, their identity becomes this slightly less human thing. You know, there's like the stoic-eyed, dark-eyed country music star. And then if you remove them, you're like, who's that guy?
Who is the one who always wore sunglasses? Was it Roy Orbison? Did he always have sunglasses on?
Yes, I believe he did. Another one is Hank Williams Jr.
Oh, no.
Always wore sunglasses. But I believe that was, if memory serves me correctly, part of that was due to an injury he sustained as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I think another way that sunglasses lend a sense of coolness and maybe even celebrity or glamour to people is that they increase a sense of mystery, right? That's sort of what you're getting at here.
Well, right? Yeah, because at the other side, what do their eyes look like?
Yeah.
What is it like to have a personal connection with this person? I don't even know who dare stares into the eyes of Bocephus.
It's like Medusa.
Yeah. Speaking of psychology and sunglasses, I also read a 2014 University of Siena study, Siena in Italy, and they made a connection between panic attacks, specifically panic disorders, and fear of bright lights. Hmm. And so people who experience panic attacks and have a panic disorder, they said often find comfort in the use of sunglasses.
That's interesting. I wonder what the causal ordering there is. Hmm. Is it like they find comfort in sunglasses because they're afraid of bright lights, or they're afraid of bright lights because they find comfort in sunglasses?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because there's so many – now that we've discussed all these various just psychological elements that could be in play, from the enclosed cognition to even just personal identity. Like if you wear sunglasses so much that they are just a part of who you are, then it makes sense that you would feel naked without them. Maybe you end up just wearing your sunglasses at night, much like Corey Hart did.
Are you lonely just like me? Mercy.
All right, so there you have it. That is the episode of Invention for this week. We do hope that you will check out inventionpod.com. That is where you'll find the existing episodes of the Invention podcast. You'll also find links out to our social media accounts. And if you want to talk about this episode inside of a Facebook group, you should go to the Stuff to Blow Your Mind discussion module, because that is where we are known to hang out and discuss episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, but we're also happy to talk about episodes of Invention.
Huge thanks, as always, to Scott Benjamin for research assistance on this show, and to our excellent audio producer, Tari Harrison. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hi, you can email us at contact@inventionpod.com.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.